Okay, so everyone's gonna start a second. If everybody could just show around with the cupboard. Cover that door, guys. If you could just put your phones away. Try to focus for the next few minutes. It's an amazing privilege to have our Hollywoods. It doesn't need any introduction, so we're not going to give her any. Right, Benitz already did that for us. But please give your most undivided attention to a hush of a guest.
Thank you. Join us today. Thank you very much. Wow. It's so great to be here in NCSR Poland. I hope you're all having a fantastic summer. I just wanted to share with you, I was told my topic was supposed to be like the top 20 most interesting questions I got over the last year. I am not going to talk about 20 questions, that's way too many. But maybe I'll give you a sampling of 3, 4, 5, and you'll tell me which ones you find interesting. Like, what I like to do is just to let you know what like rabbis deal with all the time. You know, the kinds of questions that people often think that being a rabbi is not an exciting job. It is a super exciting job. There are lots of weird things that happen out there, and people in strange situations, and sometimes just strange people. And a lot of interesting things to talk about. So let me start with one that my son Jonas suggested that I start with. I got an email, this was years ago, this was not from this year. I got an email from a rabbi from a South American country. He told me I'm not allowed to identify the name of the country lest anyone figures out who the protagonists in the story are. So if you have any friends in South America, you know, this may or may not be them. I got an email from a rabbi in a South American country, a Kiruv rabbi, and he told me that there was a fellow who is a Jewish guy, super sweet, smart guy, and he's involved in everything good that happens in our community. You know, he gives tzedakah, mostly it's tzedakah. When a rabbi says everything good, mostly it's, he supports the school, he supports the yeshiva, he gives money here and there, and he even though he grew up totally not religious, he even started learning Torah on a daily basis. He started putting on tefillin. He started keeping a kosher home. He started keeping Shabbos. Only one little problem. He's married to a non-Jew. But other than that, he is good. I mean, he's doing everything. So his wife, his non-Jewish wife, said, I'll convert. I like this lifestyle. It's fantastic. I'm ready to convert. Another little problem. This fellow happens to be a Kohen. So what's the halacha? A Kohen is not allowed to marry who? A convert, Gioras, or a Grusha, a divorced woman. This woman is going to be a convert. So if she converts, he can't be married to her. So normally you say, okay, checkmate. This is one of those unfortunate things, and there's nothing you can do. You can't outsmart God. You're stuck. But this guy, he's pretty smart. He was attending a shiur, Maseches Yevamos. And in the shiur, whoever was giving the shiur mentioned that there's another halacha, that a Patsuadako Krushokha, which means a person who is, for lack of a better term, castrated. Do I have to get more graphic than that, or are we good with that? Someone with...
We're good.
Okay. I brought diagrams, but okay. So, if a person has that kind of condition, then he said the way it was phrased in the email was he heard of the heter that a kohen who has that kind of condition is allowed to marry a gioras. So all he needs to do is don't finish the sentence. All he needs to do. There's a surgery you could do called a vasectomy. And all he needs to do is that little surgery, one little snip, and he'll be allowed to stay married to his wife. What's the problem with that solution? It's usher to get that surgery, right? It's usher to get that surgery. So his Shiloh was, the rabbi Shiloh was, what should he tell the guy? Should he tell the guy, you know what? It's usher to get that surgery. But it's better than being married to a guy for the rest of your life, and it's better than, you know, you really don't have any other options. Or should you say, no, it's an absolute isser, don't do it, you cannot do it, we're not going to convert your wife, it's absolutely not going to happen. That was challenge number one. So let's put that one aside, and I'll give you a couple of others, and maybe you'll tell me what interests you. I got a call a few, I guess 2 months ago now, maybe even more, from a guy who lives in San Jose, I believe, Northern California. I have a brother who lives in San Jose. I only have one brother. My brother lives in San Jose, and my brother sent this fellow to me for some reason. And this fellow is a guy who, a year ago, for a living, he was driving an Uber. Now, Uber is wonderful and super convenient, but unless you're the guy who founded the company, you're not really making tons of money when you're driving an Uber. You know, he wasn't really making great parnasa. Also, Sephardi guy, super sweet, you know, Baal Tshuva, really optimistic, you know, very sincere kind of fellow. And while he was driving his Uber around the San Jose area, an idea struck him. He had an idea in his head. He thought of a great business idea. So, now, I heard the idea, it didn't sound like a great business idea to me, but his great business idea was that he's going to re-insulate people's attics. And it's going to be a booming business. If you would have asked me, I would have said, I don't even know what that means, so probably you can't convince people to spend thousands of dollars to do it. But he did it. He's making, 1 year later, millions of dollars. And all of the previously unemployed people that he knows, that Davin and Ishul, are now employed by him. Unbelievable. Now, what do you do when you have that kind of break in life? You know, when life hands you something like that. So what do? You have a karas hatov. To who? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what does he do? He starts thinking, I have to do more for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I have to do more for Hashem. So he starts, you know, giving way more than ma'aser. He gives 20%, 30% of his money. He's not even allowed to give more than 20%. He doesn't care. He's giving lots and lots, you know, giving as much as he possibly can. And, you know, giving jobs to everybody and chesed all over the place and learning more. And he still feels like it's not enough. So he decided that he wants to give like a piece of himself. Like literally, he wants to give a kidney to another Jew so that he can, you know, just give more. And he had no idea. He thought that in order to give a kidney to another Jew, he had to fly to Israel. Because only, you know, if you want to give to a Jew, you go where the Jews are. And where are the Jews? Israel. So he was going to fly to Israel, have some doctor take his kidney, and give it to another Jew, and he was going to do the recuperation here. He has no family here, no friends here, but, you know, that's what you got to do if you want to give a kidney to another Jew. And then someone said to him, you know, you don't really have to do that. There's an organization in America called Renewal, and they like, arrange for kidney donations to other Jews, so you can do that. So he calls up Renewal, and he says, I want to give a kidney. They say, okay, great, you came to the right place. What are your preferences? So he says, preferences? My preference is to give my kidney. So they say, no, who do you want to give it to? A Jew. So he said, well, you know, beyond that, you can choose. You can choose whether you want to give it to a male or a female, to a from person or non-from person, an adult or a child, meaning it's your kidney, you can do whatever the heck you want with it, so give it to whoever you want. So he now had a shayla. What's his shayla? How does he choose? Does halacha demand that he chooses one person or another? Is there any like requirement about that? So he called me up to ask what I thought. Does he have any requirements? But the truth is, he has another shayla also that he didn't even think of. What's the other shayla? Is he allowed to donate in the first place? Right? Let's say a person says, you know, I don't use my head that much anyway. You know, so like, I'll donate my brain, you know, to someone. But you can't just like decapitate yourself. Like, you can't just like, I'll donate my left arm to, you know, like, you don't do that. I don't know if they can. But so you wouldn't, right? So are you allowed to do that? Is that even permissible? So that's shayla number two. Shayla number three, what am I going to check for number three? Shaila number three. Okay, this is a Maisa Shaya Kafaya. This is also a true story that happened. all of these are true stories, these are real cases. A guy told me he was at a wedding, and he was helping in the celebration at the wedding. And his shtick at weddings was that he would leapfrog people at weddings. You know what that is? So he'd like line up a group of guys, and he'd take a running jump, and he'd like put his hand on the guy's shoulder, and like leapfrog over them, like in front of the chasen kala, and like, you know, that, you know, makes a labor dick, right? You know, like I have a friend who likes to juggle. He's not particularly good at juggling. He likes to juggle, and he was once juggling fire at a wedding, and he almost lit the kala on fire. You know, he enjoys juggling, but so this fellow, he likes to leapfrog people at weddings. That's his thing. That's what he does. So, you know, at some point during the dancing, they sit the chasen down in the chair, because the chasen, depending, you know, very often has not spent the summer, you know, with his break in the afternoon playing basketball and hockey. Very often he spent the last several years of his life, you know, sitting around and, like, eating very well and, like, not necessarily capable of, you know, of dancing for 3-4 hours straight. So you sit the chasen down in the chair. And the chasen then watches as everyone dances in front of him, and that's when people do their shtick, and that's when they do the fun stuff. So this guy was going to do his regular leapfrogging thing, which he's very good at. He knows how to do it. Then an idea struck him. He's going to do something a little different this time. You see, if you're the chasen, if I could just demonstrate it with you. Turn your chair around. As my lovely assistant here helps, right? So he has the chasen over there. All the people are dancing in front. He decides, what if he comes flying in over the chasen's head? And like, the chasen's like, whoa! And then he lands and he dances in front of him. So he decides he's going to leapfrog from behind him, right? So he lines up guys behind him, unbeknownst to you, right? He lines up a bunch of guys behind him. And now, after the chasen sits, what often happens next? There's often another chair or two that gets pulled in. For who? So the kala, if the kala, they bring the kala over. And if they don't bring the kala over, who's going to sit on the parents? Father of the bride, here. Father of the groom, here. But this guy's already got his whole line set up. He doesn't realize father of the bride and father of the groom are there and there. So this guy takes a running jump, clears the whole line of people that he's leapfrogging, easily clears the chasen's head with his legs split, has one knee go right in the back of the kala of the bride's head, one knee go right in the back of the kala of the father of the groom's head. They both go down on the floor, and you know, it didn't work out quite the way he wanted. So the father of the groom gets up right away. You can turn around now. Did a great job. The father of the groom gets up and says, oh, the father of the groom gets up. He says, I'm okay. Father of the bride says, call Atzalah. He's like, he's in pain. He doesn't know what happened. He's dizzy. The guy who did the leapfrog says, oh, I'm in Atzalah. He says, no, not you. Doesn't want that guy. So they, ultimately, he almost went to the hospital. He didn't go to the hospital. He wasn't from New York. He's from, I'm not going to say what city, from, you know, some other city. And 2 weeks later, this fellow, this yeshiva buffer, gets a bill in the mail for $500. Because the father of the bride said, I had to go to a hospital for tests before I can get on a plane, and my insurance didn't cover it, and this is my out-of-pocket expense, $500. Right, he got a bill in the mail. So the fellow didn't know what to do. So what do you do when you have a question like this? Where do you go? So he didn't go to the Yiddish. He didn't go to me. He went to the Rebbe Leibowitz, the real Rebbe Leibowitz. He went to his Rebbe in Yeshiva, so close. He went to his Rebbe in Yeshiva, and his Rebbe in Yeshiva said to him, all right, look, you know, what's he going to do? He's going to sue you for $500? Send him $200 and say, look, if you want more, you can sue me for the rest. And he's not going to. He'll be happy to have the $200 and that'll make it go away. So he thought that sounded wrong. So he went to another Rebbe in Yeshiva, who happens to be a son of the first Rebbe in Yeshiva. I'm not going to reveal the Yeshiva, although it would make it much more fascinating, right? But so he went to another Rebbe in the Yeshiva, and the other Rebbe said, my father is wrong, that's absolutely incorrect, you owe the full $500, you got to pay $500. Nothing to talk about. There's absolutely nothing to talk about over here. So now he didn't know what to do. Now he had two opinions, and So then he went to me. Then he asked me, what do you think? What should I do? It's not a shiloh number three. Should we do one more before we start going through answers? One more. Let's do one more. One more. Come on. Yonah, which one should I do?
Try.
Nothing. What? Oh, okay. All right. So Daniel says I should do... this was more recent. This is from this year also. Last time I was in Eretz Yisrael, it was right after Pesach. And on Wednesday, I remember it was a Wednesday, I got an email from a fellow. And the email started out, a fellow I never met, the email started out, Shalom, Rabbi. And that's why Daniel said, Shalom, Rabbi. And the email went something like this. Normally I like to read it, but I don't have it in front of me. It must be somewhere in this box. But the email went something like this. The fellow said that he grew up, I shouldn't say what part of the country, in some, you know, smaller Jewish community in the United States. And he said that his parents are both Russian immigrants. His parents are very, very intelligent people. They taught, they have both PhDs in the university in this this place. Lemaisa, he said that when he was a little boy, it came to light that his mother was probably not Jewish. His mother was adopted by a Russian family in Russia, by a Jewish family, but not a religious family. And they told her, yeah, yeah, don't worry, you're Jewish, you're fine. But like, there's very little evidence that his mother was actually Jewish. And that was okay, because when he was a little kid, his parents weren't religious at all. So, you know, the word of his adopted grandparents that, you know, that you're Jewish was good enough. You know, he was fine with that. So, but then when he was like 6 or 7, his parents started, you know, slowly, incrementally, which is the only way to grow, incrementally started observing more and more. They started keeping Shabbos, you know, lighting Shabbos candles first, going to the local Chabad house, little by little. They started observing more and more. By the time he was 8 or 9 or 10, you know, they were really much more involved, Jewishly involved. When he was 11 or 12, they were all in. They were fully religious. He said that he resented it. He couldn't stand it. Such a life change for a child to go through. You know, he loved being able to go get, you know, the Big Mac on the corner or whatever he wanted for 99 cents. Why does he have to pay $12 for an inferior hamburger now? Like, he didn't enjoy this new, he liked being able, you know, like being able to eat deli for breakfast, although you can do that now. But okay, if you have Twitter, you'll get it later. But he loved...
fully religious.
He loved being able to do all these things that he was able to do before, and now he can't do any of these things. So he was very resentful of the whole thing. He said that he remembers the Chabad rabbi sat him down and said to him, "Now listen, we're going to put you in a mikvah." He had a brit, he was a baby, but he had a circumcision, not a brit. So they did actually hatafas dam bris on him. You know what that is? Not going to pull out diagrams here either, but Hatavas Dam Bris they did on him, which, by the way, I'm involved in a basin for gerus, you know, in a basin for conversion in New York, in Queens, and people always ask, like, what's the most uncomfortable part, what's the most challenging part of being involved in, like, a basin for gerus? Like, someone said to me, probably when a woman has to convert, it's probably very uncomfortable. Why would it be very uncomfortable? Because what does conversion involve? Mikvah, right? So going to the mikvah. So, and 3 rabbis got to be there while a woman... Like, people are very confused by this. How does this work? So it's actually pretty simple. She wears a robe and goes into the mikvah with the robe, and then after the rabbis leave, she dips again without the robe. So there's no, like... No, that's not nearly the most uncomfortable part. The most uncomfortable part is watching that Tafas Dam Bris, which the rabbis have to be watching and see every time. So, okay, now that I just made you all cringe. So this fellow had a Tafas Dam Bris as a child, and the Chabad rabbi said to him, around his bar mitzvah time, if you want to walk away, you can walk away. And your parents will still love you. You do not have to be a Jew. It's your choice. And he said, you know, in my mind, I was thinking, yeah, it's my choice, but come on. You know, my parents would be so disappointed if I walk away. He hated it. He hated everything about Judaism. But how could he do that to his parents? So he said, I was a good Jewish boy in front of my parents all the time. Whenever my parents were around, I was a good Jewish boy. But secretly, on Friday night, I, you know, would go and play games on my phone all night. I would be texting, I would do whatever. So essentially, you know, like he became modern Orthodox high school kid now. Secretly, he was Mechala Shabbos. When he would hang out with his friends, he was eating non-kosher, but his parents never knew about it. He said, I was not Shomer Shabbos a single time from my bar mitzvah until I was 17 years old. Now he's 18 and a half or something, and he's learning the yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael and loving it. And this, it says all of this in this email. He's learning yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, loving every minute of it. And he says, so I've been afraid to ask this question for so long, but I guess I really need to ask the question now. Am I Jewish? He said he's not sure if he's Jewish. Was his conversion valid? If he said, yeah, I'm in, but then he wasn't really in. He was eating non-kosher, he was being Mechal Shabbos. And he says, oh, yeah, by the way, you know, okay, so what's the nafkamina? Okay, let's, whether you are or not, we can figure it out later. In the meantime, keep kosher. In the meantime, you know, don't say Lashon Hara, right? Probably as well, he's not allowed to say Lashon Hara. In the meantime, do all these, you know, do what you're supposed to be doing, right? What's the problem?
Shabbos.
A Jew who doesn't keep Shabbos is Chayav Misa. So he's like, I really need to know what to do about this coming Shabbos. And this was on Wednesday night. So we had, you know, between Wednesday night and Friday to figure out whether this guy should keep Shabbos. Stop at those four and then we'll start answering them. Yeah? Okay, so remind me, what were they again? Number one was? Castration was number one?
Yeah.
Okay, castration number two?
Kidney.
The kidney, okay. Number three? Leapfrogging. And number four? What? Right, the Gera. Okay, which one are we talking about first? That's the stupidest way to ask that question. This is what not to do if you ever have a room full of people and you need to take a quick poll. All those who prefer number one, please raise your hand. All those who prefer number two, please raise your hand. All those who prefer number three, please raise your hand. All those who prefer number four. Ooh! So one and four, it's a tight race. Okay, so we'll start with four, we'll go to one, and then we'll go to the others, okay? That is shut. So the four was the Garrett case. I have my computer in front of me. I didn't pull up the notes on that one, so it should take quick, because I don't remember anything. I have like the memory of like a drunk housefly, you know? don't worry about it. So, what's the issue over here? What's the issue over here? The number one thing you have to think about whenever it comes to any halacha, any real life situation, like, what book do I open up to? What book do I open up, and where do I open it up to? So what's the issue? What area of halacha do I need to think about over here? I need to think about gerus, right? I need to think about gerus. What's a specific kind of gerus? What kind of gerus? Of a child, of a kata. See, normally gerus involves, for a man, gerus involves three ingredients. What are three ingredients in gerus? Mila, tvila, kabbalas mitzvos. You could do mila on a child. We do it all the time. You could do tvila on a child. You probably haven't seen that so much, but we do it all the time when we do gerus. We do gerus of children all the time when there are adopted children who have questions in their yichus. So we'll all the time, we'll do, and it's not that big a deal. A kid is a 2-year-old, you can go do a mikveh. You know, and even if they don't know how to swim yet, and they don't know, the father goes in, the father's wearing his bathing suit, usually holding the kid. I mean, always, otherwise that would be weird. But the father's, you know, he's holding the kid, and he goes down in the mikvah holding the kid, and the kid's, you know, like in a bathtub, where the kid's like, for a second, and then he's fine, and he's, oh, that was fun, okay. It's no big deal, tefillah. Kabbalah's mitzvos. What's Kabbalah's mitzvos? That I'm accepting upon myself to do all the mitzvos. Wait a second. In order to convert, you have to commit to keep every mitzvah? What if I do a conversion, and I would bet that this might have happened already to some of the converts that the basin I'm involved with has done, and that the basin is under the auspices of not people like me, of big, big rabbis. Rav Schechter is the posek for our basin. Right? Big rabbis. But I would bet that at least one of the people that we've converted over the last couple of years, since the time of their conversion, has spoken Lashon Hara. I can't know for sure, and maybe that is Lashon Hara to say about them, but I would bet they spoke Lashon Hara. Somebody. So what? They're a guy. They said they were Makabel Mitzvos, and then they went and they spoke Lashon Hara. So is that a Kabbalah's mitzvahs?
Yes.
Why? Meaning, yeah, obviously, right? So why? Why would that be okay? They accepted to do all the mitzvahs, and then they go and speak Lashon Hara. What if they were mechal the first Shabbos? Would you say that's a valid geirus? I wouldn't. I would say that's not. They weren't really mechal. They couldn't keep their first Shabbos. They were on purpose. Okay, by accident is one thing. On purpose, mechal the first Shabbos. If they went out right afterwards, right after the geirus was over, to celebrate, which they often do, by the way, it's like a huge thing. First thing they want to do for the men is put on tefillin and daven mincha, because we usually do it late morning. So they want to put on tefillin and daven mincha. First thing they want to do. They're so excited to be Jewish. You know, the women right now, they'll bring a snack bag with them so they can say brachos on food and do it as a Jew. They've practiced these brachos for years before the geirus. Makes you appreciate what it is to have these opportunities all the time. But we're born with them, so we don't appreciate them. So why is it that if they speak Lashon Hara, that's okay, they're still a Jew?
At the time
they had in mind they can keep all the mitzvot. So is that, how do I know that that's true? I mean, did they really think they were never going to speak Lashon Hara? Like, if you would have asked them at that time, have you learned the entire Sefer Chafetz Chaim with all the details? Look, when you speak Lashon Hara L'Toelos, how many conditions have to be met in order to... Like, it's impossible. Like, Chafetz Chaim basically says in the Sefer Chafetz Chaim, no one is ever allowed to speak Lashon Hara except for me, because I'm the only one that knows all the... You know, it's like very, very hard to keep all the rules. It's very, very... So, like, they really thought that. So that's a very good idea, but I'm not... If you really would have questioned them, we don't push them on it. You know, we ask interesting questions to Gerim sometimes. We want to make sure that they can function as a Jew. You say, okay, you're going to eat an apple. What bracha do you say? You know, you're going to come home Friday night from synagogue. What do? They have to know. We say Kiddush. We wash our boats. You know, like, they have to function. We have to know that they're able to function. Yeah, when you leave the restroom, what do you do? Just to be able to you know, warming food on Shabbos, questions like that. I was once in a meeting with Rabbanim and a candidate, African-American medical student from Binghamton. Very fascinating guy. He was like, Binghamton is not the community it once was, and I don't know if it was ever super big, but, you know, the rabbi from Binghamton was desperate to get this guy converted because he was their 10th man, you know, like they needed him for the minyan. So, but a great, great Geirus candidate, now he's a Jew, and the rabbi asked him, what bracha do you make on sushi? I turn to the rabbi, I'm like, come on! That's not fair. Like, you're asking if he's like the posek ador, you know? Like, probably Yashiv Rosh Hashanah, you know, still trying to work this out. Like, you know, like, what bracha? But the guy, like, without batting an eye, he says, I would say mizonos, because the rice is the ikar, and to me, the fish is the taco. Oh my gosh, give the guy smicha, forget it. That's unbelievable. So, you have, like, you know, these. But you know, if you were to ask him, can you really say that you're going to keep all the halachas of Lashon Hara? Or a woman converts and you find that her sleeves don't meet the B'nai Brak standards. So what? She's a good. I saw pictures, photographic evidence of an elbow. So is she now a good? But here's the thing. If we are Chas V'Shalom Michal Shabbos, you know what you still are? A Jew. And you know what? If their Geirus works and they're frum for 5-10 years, let's say, and then later on, God forbid, they're Michal Shabbos, you know what they are? A Jew. But over here, you have something different. They have to be Mekabel the mitzvahs for themselves.
We had a share last night where the guy spoke about tshuva and how you can have kabbalah on a tea and then fall into a relapse, and that tshuva still counts as tshuva. So we have a concept in Judaism where you have a kabbalah and you mean it at that second, but you can still fall into a trap and commit that same sin, but your tshuva was effective.
Good. Now, right, so very good. The concept definitely exists within Judaism.
But
within gay, right, to make the Jew may require a little more. I don't want to get too caught up, but I already did get too caught up in this. L'maisa, the bottom line is, for this kind of thing, they have to accept to be observant to the standards of their Orthodox community. So they are going to, you know, Shefka likes to say, I don't know if it's not politically correct, it's important, isn't it? Yeah, whatever. Shefka likes to say, Ramaz are better. They have to commit. Orthodox community. As long as the community defines itself as Orthodox, if their local Orthodox community wears bulletproof stockings and whatever, then that's what they have to commit to do. If their local Orthodox community, you know, all the women are on a WhatsApp chat so they can speak Lashon Hara about, you know, they're on 15 WhatsApp chats, a group of 15 women, but each one leaves one of the women off so that they can speak Lashon Hara about all the women. You know, so if that's the standard of their community, that now obviously your whole life you have to be growing and trying for more and doing better, that's your Kabbalah. Here's the problem in this case. This was a child. A child can't do Kabbalah's mitzvah. So what do we do with a child? So we do with the child, it's very simple. We matbilino so al das beis. I remember when I was in Yeshiva Karen Biavna many years ago, Rav Shechter came to visit the Yeshiva. I remember overhearing this. He walks into the Beis Medrash, and they said, oh, Rebbe, you're going to say Shir now. And he said, yeah, what sechta are you learning? And he said, Ksubas. And he said, what daf? And they said, Daf Yud Aleph. He said, okay. And he got up and he said a shir. And it was Daf Yud Aleph. I'm Gerrit Katan for now. It was like, that was the first time I'd ever seen anything like that. And Rav Sachs does it with every yeshiva he visits. So I said to Rav Sachs, you know, it's pretty impressive. You know, I could talk to him like that. I said, it's that's like amazing. And he said, they don't learn like the most esoteric things, you know? Like, you know, there are like six mesechtas that yeshivas learn. So what's the big deal? I just have to know, I just have to be able to spit out a shir for an hour on every daf in six different mesechtas. Good, it's fine. So Rav Shechter spoke about Ger Katan. Ger Katan is a sugya where we take a child and we put him in a mikvah and we're matbilin also al das basin. The basin provides the das, he can't have the das. And then, Higdilu, when he gets older, you call him Limchos. He has the right to say, I'm out. And people have done that, by the way. At the age of 13, people have said, not interested. Doesn't resonate with me. And his parents, legally, they adopted him or whatever. They have to still love him and take care of him or whatever. But he's out. And we have nothing against him. He's 100% allowed to do that. That's his Geirut Katan. Right? Now, the issue over here was figuring out the Metzius. Was this guy a Geirut Katan or was he an adult when this happened? Was he Bar Mitzvah yet? Because if it was after his Bar Mitzvah when this happened, then he needs to be Mekabel Mitzvahs. And he was not Mekabel Mitzvahs at the time. He was not Mekabel Mitzvahs at the time. How do I know? Because he told me. He said, I didn't keep a Shabbos, I didn't keep kosher, and in my heart, in my mind, I was thinking, I don't want this. He was not Mekabel Mitzvahs. So if he was after Bar Mitzvah, this is a problem. If he was before Bar Mitzvah, it should be fine. Because he never has to be Mekabel Mitzvahs. All he has to say is, I don't want to leave, I want to stay. He has to be granted the opportunity, and take advantage of the opportunity.
Technos within this case, and he was never granted the opportunity per se once he was in
the position. So all he said was around my bar mitzvah time, I would
still. But if it's before, it's not a big deal.
Right. Well, yes, we know that they could prepare him in advance and say, look, you're going to have a decision to make. And then at his bar mitzvah, they say, no, what's your choice? It would be a little anticlimactic. Like, he gets up to say his bar mitzvah drasha, and he says, by the way, my choice is no. And, you know, like, he walks away. But at his bar mitzvah, he knew that he had the right to make that choice. Yeah.
Did you say that there's a chance that his father wasn't Jewish?
So here's the thing, right? Even if it turns out that we think that his gerus might have been questionable, if there's a chance that his mother was Jewish, we cannot tell him to be Mechal Shabbos. Right? You would not say, oh, don't keep Shabbos this week, because if there's a chance that his mother's Jewish, then he might be Jewish. You should know, by the way, in many of the gerus cases that we're involved with, there's Jewish blood somewhere. We had this guy came to convert, this guy from the Dominican Republic. He looked like he was from the Dominican Republic. Like, he looked like if he was 20 years younger, he'd be coming out of the Yankees bullpen, you know? So this guy, he was a total flake. I mean, I was super unimpressed with him. I did not want to convert this guy. What interests you about Judaism? Well, I had a dream, and God came to me and said, whatever. And what if you have a dream tomorrow where that says not to be Jewish? Like, I was not into this conversion at all. I was ready to vote no, right? This guy was a total flake. And then he said, and he's giving this whole speech about his dream, and God told him to put a sign on his lawn that God is great with a monkey dumb on it or something. Weird guy. I mean, like, so he says, and besides, my grandmother was Jewish. And I'm like, okay, which grandmother? You know? So he's like, my mother's mother was Mrs. Goldberg. I mean, this is a black guy from the Dominican Republic. This is part of the tragedy of the Holocaust. After the Holocaust, his grandmother from Poland left Poland, ended up in the Dominican Republic, married some Dominican guy. And sure enough, you know, two generations later, he's coming back. He had a dream that he's got to go. But it turned out he didn't need a gerus. He was Jewish. All he needed is evidence that his grandmother was who she said he was. And that wasn't a dream either. You know, like, that's all. Once we have that evidence, that's all you need. So in this case, as it turns out, the fellow is definitely Jewish. Or definitely Jewish enough that you cannot tell him to be Mechal Shabbos. I asked him, Yisroel Silverstein. He's the one that writes, you know, those what if books, or he doesn't actually write them in English, but you know, they translate. I asked him, as a Silverstein, what the guy should do. He said the guy should get three friends together in yeshiva and do a couple mitzvahs in front of the three friends. Who says this Kabbalah mitzvah has to have been done then? Let him do it just in case. Let him do a Kabbalah mitzvah before Shabbos to be safe. And then we'll take care of the Gevurah later on. We'll do a Giyur L'Chumrah later on. Just in case. Because you never know what some rabbi in some small town, you never know what he did and what standards he had. He wanted to get a good through that to make sure that he can't call his Yichus into question. But he said, in the meantime, let him just do a Kabbalah mitzvah in front of three friends. That's what Rav Silverstein suggested.
If it was done before his bar mitzvah, isn't it still an issue? Because by being the Mechal Shabbos and not keeping the mitzvah, isn't showing him the Holocaust?
So that's right. So that's an interesting. It's an interesting question. What the standard of limchos is? What it means to object? I have a friend who teaches in a modern Orthodox yeshiva high school, a very wonderful modern Orthodox yeshiva high school, and one of his students didn't show up. They have Sunday shir in this modern Orthodox yeshiva high school. I guess I just gave away which one it is. But one of his students didn't show up to shiur on Sunday, and he said, "Where were you?" And the kid said, "Sorry, I was at church." And he said, "What?" And he said, "Yeah, I was at church. Last week I went to a mosque, but this Sunday I went to church." And he said, "What are you talking about?" And the guy said, "Well, you know, I discovered I'm adopted, and that, you know, I remember that I was converted. But no one ever told me that I have a choice." And this kid at this point in his life was not keeping anything. He was not keeping Torah mitzvahs. No one ever told me I have a choice. So I'm playing the field a little bit. I discovered that I have a choice. And he might be right. Rav Shaftar said, yeah, let him, if he's not being shown, let him choose no. Even at that point. So exactly what a choice is, it's a very complicated thing, but it doesn't seem to be the same standard as Kabbalah's mitzvahs. I mean, it seems to me that the conversion happens already, and he has to say that he wants to be a Jew. I just want to touch on one of the other. What was the other one that we wanted to do? The castration one. Yeah. So that was a. Oh God. Yeah. Let's remind ourselves of the story. This guy is married to a non-Jewish woman. Oh, I forgot to mention the detail. He has four sons with his non-Jewish wife. He has many, many grandchildren. All of his four sons, every single one of them, is married to a Jewish woman. All of his grandchildren are Jewish. Okay? All of his grandchildren are Jewish. Stam, a detail. Okay? Now his wife wants to convert. They say, yeah, we can convert you, but then you can't be married to your husband. He says, no problem, I'll get the surgery, and then we'll be able to stay married to each other. So what are the issues? What do I need to look at over here? What is the nature of the issur of getting this surgery? So a lot of people are unaware that there is an issur d'oraisa to neuter a human or a pet. Right? A lot of people who have pets don't know that there's an issur d'oraisa to neuter a pet. You have to do it if you're a dog owner, because otherwise the dog gets very aggressive, but you're not allowed to do it if you're a Jew. So what do you do if you're a Jew and you want to own a dog? You got to buy it after it's already neutered. Right? So it's an issur d'oraisa. So first thing we want to look to see, is there any way we can knock this down from an issur d'oraisa to an issur d'rabbanan? Anyone here want to be a doctor? Nobody want to? Oh, okay. At some point, when you're going through residency or internships or whatever, you do rounds in different areas of the hospital. And at some point, they're going to be doing like a vasectomy or something like that. And they will honor one of the best residents with the opportunity to do the snip. And it's like, wow, you know, to do a procedure as a... I can't tell you how many firm residents don't realize that that's an issur d'oraisa. Oh, but the patient's a good. You're not even allowed to do it on an animal. You're for sure not allowed to do it on a human being. It's an issur d'oraisa. Is there any way this guy getting the surgery might only be an issur d'rabbanan? Any way whatsoever?
He's going to do it.
He gets a guy to do it. Ah, so first of all, what would that be called? Amir al-Aqim, right? Amir al-Aqim, that you're asking a non-Jew to do this for you. So that is there any way to argue with that? Any way to say that? No, that doesn't help. What? Okay, but is there anybody say that asking a guy to do it is not going to be good enough to knock it down to a drabana? Back up a step. Who's not allowed to do this? Is it only Jews that are included in this issur, or even non-Jews? So the halacha is machlokas. Machlokas in the Gemara, machlokas in the Rishonim. As late as the Aruch HaShulchan, he says, we still haven't decided this machlokas. Whether it's an issur even on non-Jews. Huge difference over here. If it's usher even for non-Jews, then when you ask a non-Jew to do the surgery for you, what are you asking for? What are you violating, rather? What is it? Lifnei Iver. You're violating Lifnei Iver. D'oraisa! Why is it Lifnei Iver d'oraisa? The definition of Lifnei Iver d'oraisa is you are providing someone with the ability to do an Aveira that they could not do on their own. That physician is not allowed to go around castrating people on his own. It's only when a patient gives him permission. Otherwise, he gets arrested and put in jail. Right? The only time he's allowed to do is when a patient gives him permission to do it. It's not like you can wake up from a tonsil removal, and they say, oh, guess what else I did, you know? They cannot do this. So this would be an issur d'oraisa of lifnei iver. So now we have a machlokes. Is it an issur d'oraisa or an issur d'rabbanan? But guess what? We don't violate d'rabbanans either. We don't violate the Rabbanans either. So, what are our options over here? So, one option is, I'll tell you, I asked three Rabbanim, we're running out of time, so I'll try to make this quick. I asked three different Rabbanim, Gedolei Rabbanim, I asked Rav Shachter Shlita, I asked Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein Shlita, and I asked Rav Asher Weiss Shlita, this question. Rav Shachter said, In order to answer this question, a rabbi needs Ruach HaKodesh. I don't have Ruach HaKodesh. So I'm like, oh, okay. Super helpful. I said, I'll just find a bigger Talmud Chacham. Oh, wait, there are. Like, what was I supposed to do? I was very lost. You know, I had no idea what to do. So, okay, you need Ruach HaKodesh. He doesn't have Ruach HaKodesh. So I asked for Yitzhak Silverstein, Shlita, and Rav Silverstein said, you have to tell this fellow that this is absolutely forbidden to do. It's a violation of not one Isur Daraisa, but several Isurim Daraisa, and he gave me a list of Isurim Daraisa. You know, I mean, some of them, like, Es Hashem Elokecha Tira, you're violating. I'm like, come on, that's cheating. Everything is violating. But it actually is not cheating so much, because the Mishnah Berurah says that if a Kohen Dafka avoids doing Birchas Kohanim, it's a violation of Es Hashem Elokecha Tira, to deny one's kahuna. And that's what this guy's doing. He's trying to take away his kahuna status. And that's the way to do it. So it's a violation of that. It's a violation of the fever. It's a violation of all these terrible things. Absolutely not. You tell this guy, says Rav Silverstein, that even if he gets this surgery, we will not convert his wife. So what do you tell him to do? Divorce your wife. That's it. Hard line.
Then he won't support
the Jewish community anymore. And all of his grandchildren, all of his Jewish grandchildren are likely not going to want to be a part of the Jewish community that voted their grandmother out. Right? So there's a lot of collateral damage over here. That was Rav Silverstein's psak. What about the fact that if you have a choice of doing an iser of being married to a non-Jew, because he is not leaving his wife. He has a whole family with her. So in Israel, being married to a non-Jew every single day, or one time, just one time, getting one surgery, and it might only be a Drabanan. So isn't it better to do the lesser Avera rather than to do the bigger Avera multiple times over and over and over and over again? Isn't that better? Rizosi says, yes, it's better. But you know when we look for what's better? When you have no choice that's permissible. You know, a person is sick on Yom Kippur and they have to eat because they're going to die if they don't eat. So you look for what's better. To eat something, you know, the Ron talks about the case. You have a person who's sick on Yom Kippur. The doctor comes and says, this person will die if they don't eat meat today. Forget about Yom Kippur. Shabbos. This person will die if they don't eat meat. You open up your fridge, you look in your fridge, and there's a whole bunch of nevela meat in your fridge, non-kosher meat in your fridge. So can you eat that non-kosher meat? Why is it in your fridge? I don't know. But can you eat that non-kosher meat? You're going to die if you don't. Can you eat it?
Yes.
Then you realize, wait, I also have a cow in my backyard. I don't know why. I have a cow in my backyard. And he's still mooing. So what's my other option now? I can shecht him. So I can shecht the cow or I can eat the nevela meat. Shechting the cow on Shabbos? Hasr for sure. Chayiv? Skila. Well, yeah, good job. Chayiv skila. Eating nevela? Lo sase. Very bad. Issa d'oraisa, but not skila. So what do? Eat the nevela. Says the Ran in the name of the writer. And what if the doctor says, you need to eat, you know, like a papagai all you can eat amount of nevela. You know, like the kind, I don't know if you've ever, last night we were at my in-laws treated, I wouldn't. And my kids were at the all-you-can-eat table, and I was not. And I was, like, when you're doing it, like it feels like, oh, it's so much fun, it's coming up. When you're watching it, it is the most grotesque thing in the entire world to watch. More. I just need to rest for a little bit. There, get more. That is disgusting. It's disgusting. But the doctor says you have to eat that amount of meat. Now what do? You shuck the cow and eat it, or you eat the nevela? You know what the Ron says? Shuck the cow, because that's only one avera. This is eating the nevela, is an avera every desire. You shuck the cow, you'll have kosher meat. Okay, very interesting. Says Rav Silverstein. But over here you have a third option in our case. It's not, should he be married to a guy every day of the rest of his life? Or should he do a vasectomy just one time? There's a third option. Divorce her. Leave her. She's a guy. We never say do the lesser thing. That's what Silverstein said. I asked Rav Asher Weiss. Rav Asher Weiss said, Rav Asher Weiss said that he said, I would tell him that you cannot misrepresent the Torah ever. You're never allowed to say something that's forbidden is permissible, ever. But you can tell him that it's true that if he were to get this surgery, then it would be permissible for him to stay with his wife. But tell him it's forbidden to him to get the surgery. And then he'll do what he does. And if he doesn't, you can then convert his wife. After he doesn't. Not before he doesn't, because you're not allowed to convert someone who plans on doing an aveira. So if the woman is planning on marrying a kohen, that'll be a problem. After he does it, you can then convert his wife. He said there's a guy who knew nothing. He didn't know of any of these isurim when he got married. He didn't know that intermarriage was asur. He said he's going to go up after 120 years. He'll have one more isur derabanan on the scale, you know, after 120 years, which is a big deal. It is a big deal. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, given what the reality is, he's not leaving his wife. That's the best. That's the better of the two options. So these are some of the situations that come up in halacha. I appreciate all of you for participating. Have a wonderful day.